You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Good morning, welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, March the 2nd. The sport, nationally and internationally, continues to try to come to terms with what they saw on Saturday night and the reaction to that over the weekend, namely the picture of leading trainer Gordon Elliott sitting on a dead horse on his gallops, making a victory sign, smiling, and on his mobile phone. We discussed this extensively yesterday. We will continue to do so because the ramifications are so significant and on so many levels. Important news yesterday was that Elliott issued his second apology. This came through the Racing Post's David Jennings. He described this as an indefensible moment of madness as the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board continues their investigation, which they confirmed today will follow their due process regardless of what big festivals may be around the corner and regardless of what other jurisdictions are doing. That second point was a clear reference to the unilateral and unusual action of the British Horse Racing Authority. They are not the governing body in question responsible for policing this case, but they are the governing body of horse racing in Britain. Elliott was due to have a lot of runners at Cheltenham and Aintree in the next few weeks. They have suspended entries from Gordon Elliott stable, sending a very clear and decisive message and showing executive leadership, which has been widely praised, certainly throughout the participants in the UK. We will talk about the diplomatic implications of that and where it leaves the Irish Horse Racing Board in a few moments' time. Other significant news, though, has followed this morning. And if you thought things were bad, then they got worse, because jockey Rob James, amateur rider Rob James, a Cheltenham Festival winning jockey, for Gordon Elliott incidentally, has now had to apologise for his own stupidity, as he puts it, in again mounting a dead racehorse after it had died, this time during an exercise gallop in 2016. And the short video of that incident surfaced on social media this morning, Tuesday morning, which followed the emergence of the Elliott photograph on Saturday night. It is extremely distressing, it's very confusing, and we'd have to try and make sense of all these events and where they sit in relation to one another and what the situation is likely to be for the sport moving forward. Jane Mangan is with me this morning. Rob James has issued a full apology. He tries to make no excuse for his own behaviour. Jane, what's your reaction to this latest development?
There is no words. I haven't yet managed to properly digest what has happened with the Gordon Elliott image and the consequences that will have, not only for him but from an industry perspective. And then to be eating my breakfast this morning and see this on social media, I feel like I'm aboard a ship that is taking on water from all sides. And it's not an iceberg is sinking us, it's the people on board. This industry is taking left, right and center criticism, and rightfully so, because these are indefensible acts. And the people in question in this video obviously couldn't have possibly been thinking, because if they were, they would realize how stupid and how disgraceful the act of which they are performing in the video really is. And I'm disgusted doesn't even go there. I'm ashamed.
There's a number of questions that I wanted to ask you. And the first of those is there's talk of some wider conspiracy that images and videos are being stored with the sole purpose of bringing down the sport. Do you put anything behind that or not?
Without having any evidence, I don't buy into that. There's a lot of theories going around, and God forbid if we listen to them without any substantial evidence and without really any legitimate sources, we would be on quite the roller coaster. So no, I have become, from the era of Donald Trump, I have become a skeptic to all sources of information. And that is one I'm not buying. I think there has been one image that has obviously blown everything out of the water, And now we're basically seeing an onslaught. And I say onslaught, this is just one video, but do any of us believe it's going to stop at that? I would love to think it will, but do we believe that?
So you think this is a bandwagoning effect rather than any wider conspiracy? And do you feel that that suggestion is merely being put about to try and deflect attention from who should be condemned here, which are the people perpetrating the acts portrayed?
I don't think there's any positive purpose to putting out images or videos such as this. I saw it when I was eating my breakfast this morning. It's still something I have to get my head around. And the IHRB are under investigation. That, look, what can they really investigate? It's there. If it's a valid video, like the picture being authentic, what more investigating does need to be? It's an absolute disgrace, and there is no silver lining in this.
Okay, I wanted to touch on quite a delicate issue, but one that was skirted around yesterday, and that is the suggestion, as was reported in places, that there might be a different threshold in Ireland compared to Britain as to what is acceptable as regards people's relationship with horses, alive or dead. Speaking as an Irish person who has grown up steeped in raising, breeding, racing, riding, training horses, can you give me your perspective on that?
Yeah, I was honestly quite insulted that anybody would insinuate that there's a different standard of care, that there's a different standard full stop between Britain and Ireland when it comes to the care, the affection, and the genuine awesomeness of the animal, the racehorse, the horse in general between Britain and Ireland. And I think that that insinuation, that interpretation is false. The majority of people in this industry, whether you're a breeder, a trainer, an owner, at any stage of this industry that you have for horses, I think comparing Britain to Ireland is completely off kilter. The suggestion that there would be a different level of standard of governing between the BHA and the IHRB, I think, is unfounded as well.
Okay, we'll turn to that in a few moments' time. I want to go back to the Elliott case first of all. Gordon Elliott has issued a second apology, a second statement, which he released to David Jennings in the Racing Post yesterday. He described his photograph as an indefensible moment of madness. And he said it's the biggest mistake of his life, and he'll spend the rest of his life regretting it. Whether alive or dead, he says, the horse was entitled to dignity, a moment of madness that I'm going to have to spend the rest of my life paying for and that my staff are suffering for. I will be punished. I fully understand that. But it absolutely breaks my heart to read and hear people say that I have no respect for my horses. That couldn't be further from the truth. So that was not his initial statement, his initial apology and attempt to contextualize the offense. That was his apology, a much more full apology, if you like, that was revealed to the Racing Post last night. So Jane, tell me how you react to the timeline there of those two statements.
Yeah, so the first one didn't have any bearing with me, and the explanation as to the circumstances around the picture. Once the picture was deemed authentic, in my mind, any explanation would be irrelevant. This is an honest statement. You can see and actually feel for him in these words. The initial one, it was mechanical. In my mind, it was mechanical. I don't know how everybody else interpreted it. Last night was the first time we actually figured out, or we were told, the identity of the horse in question. And that is what we are all forgetting. The horse in question was a 7-year-old gelding called Morgan, owned by Jigginstown House Stud. He died in 2019 when this picture was taken. That is the dignity that is entitled to that horse. He has an identity now. Didn't have it for two days. This picture emerged on Saturday evening. We didn't know his identity until Monday evening. That was the first thing I took. And after that, we know Gordon Elliott. Anybody who's in the racing industry knows Gordon Elliott is actually 43 today. He has, in a very short space of time, established himself as one of the best trainers in Europe. You do not get the optimum performance from any horse, the maximum potential of any horse, unless, firstly, they are healthy, secondly, they are fit, and third, they are happy. I think you have to meet all three criteria for a horse to win and to be the best they can be. And Gordon Elliott has consistently got the best out of his horses. So I don't believe that Gordon Elliott is cruel to animals. I think he made the biggest mistake of his life and one that he's going to regret for the rest of his life.
And that apology was perhaps 24 hours later than it ought to have been. And I suggest that he was possibly poorly advised in the first instance with the first statement that was made. But it is there, and there is no reason not to believe that the comments that he made last night are genuine. Now, the IHRB continues to investigate this case. There is a pressing need for speed on their part, in part, Jane, because the British Horse Racing Authority have done something quite unusual. They have suspended any entries from Gordon Elliott's stable to run in Britain until this investigation has been completed by the IHRB. Now, this is an unusual move because normally a governing body would reciprocate the authority of the controlling governing body. So the BHA would normally reciprocate what the IHRB did as a matter of international jurisdiction courtesy. They haven't done so in this instance. What do you think the message is that is being sent here, and how is this going to impact on relations between the two nations?
Well, it's going to strain relations between the two governing bodies. There is no question about that. Personally, I think the BHA have undermined the IHRB. Gordon Elliott hasn't entries for the next 3, 4, 5 days in the UK. So to suspend runners in the UK is a message, basically, you're not having runners at Cheltenham. And that is why they have implemented this ban. I think this ban in the UK has basically forced the IHRB's hand. Whatever they were thinking before, I think this is going to have a bearing on the outcome now. And was there any need to move last night? I know the BHA want to send a message that this is intolerable, but it's not tolerable in Ireland either. And I'm sure the IHRB are going to take a strong stance on this. Yes, they want to try and nip this in the bud, but it needs to be given due course.
So here's the way I look at it, Jane, from a BHA, IHRB standpoint. The IHRB have got the difficult job here because they're the ones that have actually got to investigate. And we'll come to what they may or may not do in a moment. The BHA haven't got such a difficult job because it's not their investigation. They've got a provision within their rules where they can act unilaterally for whatever reason, if there's a disrepute issue, to refuse entries. Now, it's unusual that they do it, but they've done it. What it does is it shows a strength of leadership on the part of the BHA, which has been widely lauded. But they're not only in it for their own PR, they're in it for the image of the sport as a whole. So it also sends a message to the wider media, to the mainstream media, that the British Horse Racing Authority is going to set its bar extremely highly here and does not want any piece of this guy having runners at their upcoming meetings. Now, the flip side of that coin, as you've identified, is that if the IHRB didn't want them to do that, and it's a reasonable assumption that I think that the IHRB didn't want them to do that because it's not usual for them to act without reciprocity, then they're going to have to accept, the BHA, that they're going to have to mend some fences when this is all said and done. And they're probably going to have to be significant discussions between the two regulatory bodies to draw them together for how they proceed in similar cases in the future, because this does set a precedent, and it does set a precedent that could become quite awkward for the relations between the two countries. So whilst on one hand I would applaud the BHA for decisive and swift action, I would also concede that their job is a lot more straightforward than the job of the IHRB, who are probably feeling, understandably, a little bit battered at the moment. That's the way I would see it.
Yeah, the other thing is we need to think of the bigger picture. I know this is obviously a case surrounding Gordon Elliott, but it is damage control from the reputation of the industry point of view, and the BHA will be very mindful of that because, of course, the mainstream media have probably quite rightfully taken a keen interest in this, and they have made a statement of intent. And I actually, you know, I'm sure the IHRB will follow. I'm just surprised that the BHA have felt it necessary to do it so rapidly.
Well, this is a story with so many dimensions and one that moves very fast. And One part of this story that we've hardly mentioned over the last couple of days is Tiger Roll, the dual Grand National hero who was due to go back for a third attempt. Now, as we're recording this podcast, it's been announced that he has been withdrawn from the Aintree showpiece with his owners, Jigginstown House, who gave their backing to Gordon Elliott yesterday, saying that it was because of his, as they quote, unfair weight. Now, we've been over this argument a million times, Jane. I'm not massively surprised, but clearly the timing will cause people to speculate as to the reason why Tiger Roll's been taken out.
Yes, it could be perceived as a decoy, as a something to distract from the storm, but essentially it won't do that. It's sad that Tiger Roll won't be contesting in the National, but he was probably never going to be doing so with Gordon Elliott's name beside him. And look, it's disappointing, but at the same time, it is dropping the ocean at the moment. And I think the excuse of an unfair weight is open to interpretation, and everybody is entitled to their opinion on that too.
Just as we draw this section of today's podcast to a close, Jane, I want to throw this forward, and okay, we are being a bit preemptive here because we're not going to know the outcome of the IHRB inquiry probably until the end of the week. If Gordon Elliott's licence is withdrawn, do you think that the public, either in Ireland or Britain or both, would accept a proxy licensee? So someone's just going to come in, take over the licence and run the yard as it was running before with the same senior management team?
Absolutely not. That picture was taken by somebody in his team. There is somebody half in the picture who's obviously on his team. So that means they're as much culpable as the man sitting on the horse. So absolutely not. That would not be a satisfactory outcome. And I don't think the general public or even the racing public would find that acceptable.
Because here's the thing. What the BHA have said is that if those horses were trained by somebody else, then they're fine to be entered. So if a horse that is in the Elliott yard turns up at Cheltenham, for argument's sake, and wins under the name of A.N. Other, but is essentially in exactly the same training regime, are we not walking into not as big a PR disaster, but still a PR issue?
I would imagine the governing body will be acutely aware of this possibility before. We've seen it before with cases of trainers moving their licenses, and I don't think there's ever been a case as important or as significant as this when it comes to being under the limelight. So I would be extremely surprised if that were warranted. I know what the BHA have said, but it'll all pend the outcome of the IHRB investigation, which goes back to should they have made their move before it was even concluded. But if that is a possibility, if that is a door left open for Cullen Shaw to explore, then I would be disappointed, to be honest.
Well, my thanks to Jane Mangan for her thoughts on what is a very fast-moving story and one which we will obviously keep abreast of as the week progresses. Well, I will, during the course of this week, as well as covering all the news as it needs to be covered, be unashamed in doing what we normally do on this podcast. And on a Tuesday, that involves going around the bloodstock world with our friends at Weatherby's. And today, something quite close to my heart, because I'm passionate about breeding horses and particularly National Hunter horses, the new guide from Weatherby's, nhstallions.co.uk, pointing you towards all the, and there are plenty of really interesting and new alternatives as far as National Hunt stallions are concerned in the UK. Simon Sweeting runs Overbury Stud, which stands 5 stallions at the moment. One or two are more flat-based, but there are some National Hunt stalwarts in there, like Schiaparelli, who's had such an interesting couple of years, particularly with horses around Cheltenham, and some horses who are, we hope, on the up, like Jack Hobbs, who hasn't been fully tested yet, but has been very popular. Frontiersman also, and Cityscape, and Ardad for the two-year-olds. And Simon Sweeting, who runs Overbury Stud, joins me now. Simon, great to chat. How's the last year or so been for you?
Morning, Nick. We've been very fortunate, ridiculously fortunate. The horses have still got to be fed. We've got to get out there and do what we always do. So life has pretty much carried on for us, and business has carried on so far. It's held up remarkably well, so we've been very, very lucky indeed, and we hope it carries on. Whether we deserve it or not, I don't know, but life hasn't changed a great deal for us out here.
And in terms of demand for the stallions, have you had to work harder for that?
Yes, it feels like you have to work harder every single year. So yes, it has been a bit more of a strain, and I think particularly this year, people are holding back on making their bookings, particularly the flat mares. I don't think they're booking unless they need to. In other words, if the mare hasn't foaled, they're probably sitting back and waiting and watching. But they are sending mares in. We are getting bookings. The National Hunt Stallions have held up remarkably well. So things are keeping on going. There's a lot of resilience in this business.
As we've got to focus on National Hunt Stallions today, let's just talk through the ones that are standing with you. I mean, Schiaparelli has done quietly very well. I say quietly because he hasn't had that many headlines, but his record with horses around Cheltenham really is excellent.
It's been superb, really exciting. I'm so sad that Ronald Pump isn't going to be able to come over and run in the stayers, because he ran a sensational race last year. He ran a sensational race against Honeysuckle late last year in Ireland. He is a wonderful, tough horse. He won two races on consecutive days a few years ago. He's really magnificent, and he's what it's all about. And he's not a young horse anymore, but he's kept at it and he's kept on improving. And yes, as I say, he's a really exciting horse to be able to watch.
And Jack Hobbs was one of those horses. When he first stood as a National Hunt Stallion with you, he immediately captured the imagination. He had a sort of sexy profile for a new recruit to jumping, didn't he?
Hugely so. Second in an English Derby, a win of an Irish Derby, wins out in Dubai. Really, he started favourites. In his race at Royal Ascot, it wasn't his day, but no, he's a hugely exciting animal, and he still generates that excitement. If people come and look at the horses here, which very occasionally they can do, but whenever we have had people in the past coming and saying, "I've got an open mind, I want to look at all your National Hunt Stallions," it's always Jack Hobbs that they will pick, just because he's got such presence. And He is a truly magnificent horse, and you know that's what gets people's pulses going.
I was talking to James Willoughby, who appears on this show on a Friday normally the other day, and he said he was quite sure that a lot of these horses standing as jump stallions could sire good flat horses. Such was their own level of natural ability on the flat. We saw another article in the Racing Post overnight from Martin Stevens interviewing Philippa Cooper, where she again stressed the importance of using stallions who've excelled over a distance of ground. I mean, do you believe that some of the stock that your jump stallions are producing could win good races on the flat?
Absolutely, I do. And you've only got to look at Caiff Tara, whose first winner was in a listed race at Newbury over a mile and a quarter in a three-year-old's race. They could do it if they were given the opportunity. They're not sent the right mares to do that, but there's absolutely no doubt that they could do it. And if you take a look at the number of National Hunt trainers that are winning races at Royal Ascot and the other big festivals with horses that are supposedly National Hunt horses now, okay, over a longer distance, but they're still quite capable of doing it. But yes, I think if a horse like Jack Hobbs got some slightly faster mares and they were brought up, they were raised to run a little bit quicker, then I've got no doubt that they could be winning on the flat. But that's just not the way that we do it. We do very much segregate. We say that's National Hunt, that's flat, and that's the way that it works. Rightly or wrongly, that's what the market dictates.
Cityscape has been a real overachiever with his stakes winners around the world. I guess Urban Icon has flown the flag for him very well, and also the horse who went to Hong Kong, whose name has been changed, hasn't it, who's won, I think, well over $1 million there.
Car Ying Star, yes, he is now the winner of £1.7 million, which is just mind-boggling. He's been knocking on the door. He hasn't quite been the absolute kingpin over there, but he's very close to it, and it is extraordinary how much money he's won, but he's given his owners a great deal of fun. And yeah, he's a superb racehorse.
And when you're trying to reestablish the stud, when you've lost the services of a great stalwart like Cafe Tara, does it make you appreciate all the more just what a legend he's been?
Oh, completely. Yes, you think about starting again, and it's a big old mountain to climb. Yes, I think I did appreciate what Cafe Tara was achieving at the time, but when you look back on it, you do realise how tough it is to get there, and how difficult it's going to be to achieve it with the next one. But you're always looking forward, and that's what it's about. We want to find the next horse like him, and the next one after that as well.
Well, Simon, it's great to talk to you. I'm looking forward to seeing our dad's 2-year-olds running. I'm looking forward to Jack Hobbs' first crop National Hunt horses next year and the year after. But not as much as I'm looking forward to seeing my foal by Cityscape being born in the next couple of weeks. So I will keep you posted.
I hope the foal comes out healthy and well. And yes, there's a lot of excitement to come in the near future. And for us, particularly, it's the Ardads about to start running. But there's a lot going on and a lot to look forward to.
Simon, thanks so much for chatting to me.
Great to talk to you, Nick. Bye.
Simon Sweeting there from Overbury Stud, and I'm pleased to say I'm rounding off this podcast with another good news story. Park Lane Stables, which if you hadn't heard of them before a month ago, you certainly have now, because it's been one of the great fundraising efforts to get the stables here in Teddington, just local to where I record this podcast, over £1 million to ensure their future, not just for people who ride in this part of the world, but for thousands of riding for the disabled participants during the course of the year, and also for disadvantaged children across London who are able to access the beauty of the horse and the beauty of the Royal Parks. Natalie O'Rourke has been tirelessly working to raise this money and has done so. Natalie, what an extraordinary couple of months it's been for you.
It certainly has. Yeah, we keep pinching ourselves because we still can't quite believe it's happened. And we're so grateful to the racing community that just got behind us when we still had a huge mountain to climb. And so many people reached out to us, from racehorse owners, trainers, racing fans. And they really got us to the halfway point. And without them, we just wouldn't have got there. And then we wouldn't have got onto the BBC.
So then BBC Breakfast took over. I know you were on Good Morning Britain a few times. Rob Brydon lives very locally. Claire Balding's been instrumental in her support. Princess Anne likewise. So you've had a lot of big name support, if you like. But the racing community have been getting in touch with you for all sorts of reasons, just to try now and help you secure your future. You've got the money in the bank. That's step one. But now you need to sort of bed down and get the stables registered as part of a charity.
Yeah, so we've got the money, which in my mind I feel like nothing can be harder than that. Now we've achieved that, but yeah, we've got to be really careful with the next steps, obviously, because we are a bit naive because we haven't been in this position before. So we've put a sort of circle of trust around us, and somebody from the racing community reached out and said that he had experience in property and finance. And he said, I can't sit here and do nothing, and I just need to make sure you're okay in the next phase. So we've had a Zoom meeting, and he's sort of helping us behind the scenes in whatever way he can. But it's just so kind that he thought, oh, they've got the money and now they probably don't know what to do, which is absolutely true. So yeah, we're so grateful to everybody that's reached out to help us and has supported us on the journey.
So you are, I mean, what everybody will want to know is the crowdfunding was successful. You've got over the £1 million target. There's still donations trickling in by the day, which is fantastic. Are you completely guaranteed now? Is that it? You can buy the premises?
Yeah, that's right. We can buy the premises. What we're just being really careful of is that we're not taken for a ride, excuse the pun, because obviously it's really transparent how much money we've got. So we just need to tread carefully so that people that are not terribly kind-hearted can make us overpay. So that's why we've put in these steps to make sure that doesn't happen, and we're taking professional advice at every turn, because we've got more money really than we ever dreamed of, and that's plain for everybody to see. Crowdfunder are actually holding the money for us because we were a bit unsure, and we weren't quite ready, so they've said they'll hold the money for us until we've got everything set up, and then the money will be drawn down, because as you can imagine, having that much money, it was attracting the wrong attention. And so now we are in a position to say we don't actually have it. So nobody can get their hands on it. And Crowdfunder will hold it until we're ready. And then the purchase will go through.
And obviously the first step was to ensure that, you know, when we are in some sort of normality and beyond June, that you'd be able to run the stable as you were before. But are you now sort of thinking bigger because you've got some backing behind you?
Yeah, I think we're going to be the same but better, because in my mind there was nothing wrong with what we were doing before, and I think I don't want people that are loyal to us to worry that it's going to really change, and it's not. I just think we're going to be the same as we were, but we're just going to do it that bit better, and hopefully people will notice some subtle changes. And now we've got the extra money, we hope to be able to buy our own field so that we've always got grazing available, and in blue sky thinking, we really want to be able to have our own arena as well, so that we're not renting an arena all the time. But yeah, I think we'll still be the same part lane. We're not gonna suddenly change. It will still be us and me and the same ponies, so.
Well, you and Park Lane and all the ponies are exactly the reason why the nation quite literally has thrown their weight behind you. Natalie, thanks so much for talking to me, and keep us posted, and best of luck.
Thank you, Nick.
Natalie O'Rourke there from Park Lane Stables. She's been an absolute superstar raising this money, and it is lovely to end what is another difficult episode of this podcast on a high note, a story of a great community effort and a real dedication to horses and riders. We will be back again tomorrow. Thank you to all my guests. But for the moment, that was Tuesday, March the 2nd. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.